Thank you, members, to those of you that are on time. And I think that I'm going to move the agenda around, so we'll take up first House Bill 283, Representative Briner. Representative Briner, hold on just a second. We're gonna let a student from the university who's here just have a couple minutes of our time that I did not see on here. I don't know if it was on my agenda. But welcome, and nice to see you back here again, and identify yourself for the team.
Thank you, Chair Covina, members of the committee. My name is Christy Kramers, and I am president of the Graduate and Professional Student Assembly at the University of Minnesota. And I just want to thank you for having me here again today. I represent the 23,000 graduate professional students at the U. We're 40% of the student population, and tomorrow all of the undergraduates and graduate professional students will be coming to support the U here at the Capitol. So we will be rallying at 12 p.m. at the Rotunda, and we will be setting up meetings with our legislators. And so if you do have time, please, if you can step outside of your committees if they ask, just to briefly meet with the students, we would really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And I met with a couple of university students yesterday. So, all righty. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any questions, members? If not, then we will have Representative Briner, House File 283.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, will you please help me with the proper motion here? I'm moving House File 283 to be considered for...
Representative Briner moves that House File 283 be recommended to pass and re-refers to, I think, the capital bonding finance division, if that's the correct name of Ellis Sullivan's committee, but it's close. That's the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair and members, House File 283 is a bonding bill supporting Southern Minnesota Women's Hockey Exposition Center and a Performing Arts Center, both of which are expansions of the Mankato Civic Center, the Alltel Civic Center. Now we've gone through a name change since the last time we talked, maybe. Oh, we're Verizon now? See, that, no, sorry. Well, that aside, the name not being the issue, we had planning dollars in the last bonding bill for this project, and those dollars were line item vetoed by the governor. This is the first bonding money that Mankato has asked for in its civic center, both building and expansion. All of our civic center work has been done with our local option sales tax, so we have yet to receive state bonding money. We are the only regional center that hasn't received any bonding money for civic center expansion. And this civic center proposal grew out of a very broad community-based process called Envision 2020, which involved a strategic planning process that involved citizens from across our region. The Women's Hockey Center itself is an extension of a strong partnership between the City of Mankato and Minnesota State University. And we have with us today Mankato City Manager Pat Hentges and Rich Straka, who is the Vice President for Finance and Administration from Minnesota State University Mankato. And they're both going to make short statements and then be open to your questions.
Mr. Hentges wants to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you're aware, we have a long-standing relationship with the state of Minnesota and Minnesota State University, in particular relevant to providing hockey facilities and the facility, the Alltel Center, for large assemblies of university events. This relationship has been a good one for both the state, the city, and certainly MSU, and that we have grown this, our own facility, to something that is full capacity. One of the problems is to accommodate the women's program at MSU and additional arena events with the Southern Minnesota Women's Hockey Center. In addition to that, we are proposing a performing arts auditorium to be added to our Alltel Center as a convention center. This would benefit primarily the region, and that we can essentially accommodate larger events for the area, broader scope of events, and certainly at times intermittently make that facility available to the Minnesota State for this facility. We are ready essentially to move forward with our project. After the project was vetoed last year, we did proceed ahead with pre-design and finance that by ourselves solely with city dollars, and are now prepared to move ahead into final design and, if possible, phasing of initial development of our building program. So we're excited about where we stand. We feel that this certain project would have some stimulus to the local construction economy, certainly have an impact overall to providing equality for the Minnesota State Women's Program, and certainly have some significant economic impact for the region in providing a premier facility that is comparable to what other regional centers in the state have accomplished with state dollars. Thank you.
Mr. Straka?
Yep.
Straka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rick Straka. I am the Vice President of Finance and Administration of Minnesota State University, Mankato. Thank you for allowing me to come and talk to you today, Chair Recordina and others. I'm here primarily to talk about our support of this project and our partnership with the City of Mankato. We work very closely in both our master planning and in our other planning endeavors with the City of Mankato. I think the history of the relationship at the Alt Health Center with our men's hockey program has been a strong partnership. The shared use facilities make the best use, I think, of taxpayer dollars by having it be a hockey center on Friday and Saturday evenings and yet being available for civic center use throughout the weeks and then our off weeks. And as City Administrator Henches has said, resulting in significant use and almost capacity use of that facility. We would look forward to supporting the Women's Hockey Center. It would be an upgrade for our women's facilities that we think is an important upgrade for those facilities at this point in time. I just want to let you know that we have been in discussion with the Office of Chancellor, Minskew staff regarding this proposal, and they are supportive of this proposal as we move forward.
Okay, questions on the project? If not, then Mr. Henches, I guess I have one. So this, you did the preliminary work and the design work. This is ready to go next month.
We essentially are ready to go on the women's portion of this project, but we are ready to go into final plans and specifications on the Performing Arts Center. So a significant amount of this, we could be in construction as soon as authorization is given by the issuance of bond by the state.
Representative Obermeier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noticed in the materials that there's some job numbers that are jobs that are going to be created as a result of the construction, and I think it lists 330. Is that the actual construction work, or is that entailed with that with people who are working at the facility down the line?
So as you indicated, that's actual construction dollars that we believe will be there. We'll increase our full-time staffing to manage these two facilities, but they'll be managed under the flag of the Civic Center. So those numbers at this point probably aren't much more equivalent to about 5 to 6 full-time jobs that would be necessary for that management of the two facilities.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm a little confused if we're talking about this being a higher ed project or a workforce development, economic development project.
I think the way the bill is written, it's granted it's deed, but it still goes on to the capital bonding finance committee. I think that Mankato is here merely the university for support. I guess, you know, you have a fairly new arena right now that the men play in. Correct?
Mr. Chair, the arena was opened in 1995, and that was the
pretty new where I come from. That was open in 1995.
And that was the inaugural year of the Division One status for.
So then this project is to add another.
Essentially, it adds a practice sheet
and then the
full sheet for the women's portion of the program. And then additionally,
and
that will be used for other events, and we will provide some additional community and regional utilization of that facility.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bynum, or the folks with you, where do the women currently practice and play games? I've missed that part. I apologize.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I wanted to just comment on Representative McFarland's question. All of the Civic Center expansions that had Minsky connections have gone through this committee because of the connection to a higher education institution. The women practice at All Seasons Arena, which is a shared facility with our K-12 program, and it's actually overcommitted, and there's very little practice time available as a shared facility. And they play there also, yes, that's where they're currently housed, but it's not their facility, it's a shared facility with the public school.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative, I thought I read in here that the men would, in addition, would practice on this new sheet of ice, but they currently are using the current existing facility, so why, can you tell me why they would practice on the new sheet of ice?
If I may take that one, currently the men and women both practice at All Seasons Arena, the local...
Hold on a second. We'd like to represent me. You want to join the committee?
No,
we'd be happy to have you. Sorry.
We're primary tenants for the practice of both the men and the women at All Seasons Arena. Currently, the relationship, because it is a shared use facility, the All Health Civic Center, the men are available for Thursday practices before their games when we host on the weekend. But our men currently practice, and even on our home weekends, they take all of their equipment from the practice facility and move it down to the game facility, which works fine with us. But this would allow them to practice and play, hopefully, in a more nearer to each other.
Mr. Chair, the main issue is the Civic Center is a Civic Center. It's not primarily a hockey facility, and so it's in use for many other functions. And the men's hockey team has a set schedule that they have reserved space for, but very limited practice accessibility.
Okay. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, one last question here. Where, because this comes through higher ed, where was this on the priority list for the Minsky system?
It's come here, but this, if you look at it, it's on lines 1.9. It's a grant. This is to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development. So this is a deed project, even though it also includes Mankato State using the facility. And what is your lease agreement with them again for the men's now, and what will it go up to with this?
We currently have a lease agreement with the men through this year. We're in negotiations to extend that.
Dollar-wise, what
dollar-wise, if I look at our relationship with All Seasons Arena and the All Health Center combined, I believe we're at about $560,000 a year for practice.
Increase it by a quarter?
No, actually, we're talking about doing, with this one, we'll have a very similar arrangement than that we do now. It shouldn't significantly alter our lease agreements. We'll just be moving into newer facilities.
Okay. Questions? Any other questions? Then Representative Reiner moves that House Bill 283 be recommended to pass and we refer to capital bond and finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chairman.
Norton, House Bill 23. And Representative Norton moves that House Bill 23 be recommended to pass and refer to capital bond and finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm very pleased to be able to bring forward a bill for steam line extensions from our Olmsted County waste to energy burner out to our Rochester Community and Technical College campus. We like to talk about this as our green project. It is going to allow us to use the steam from the waste to energy that we're burning, the waste that we're burning at our waste to energy project for our facility to the steam will be put through pipes and will ultimately heat and cool our community college. It will reduce expenses to the college through their energy costs over time. It will also help us meet our Minnesota 25 by 25 standards. It is a $12 million project. We are only asking the state for half of that. It's a shared expense. And if it's okay with the chair, I would ask the folks from Olmsted County to explain the bill further.
Go ahead. And whoever wants to start, introduce yourself for the record.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon. My name is Paul Wilson. I'm an Olmsted County Commissioner. I'm very happy to be here, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. Currently, the Olmsted County Waste Energy Facility provides steam and heat and cooling to 26 public buildings within the city of Rochester. And we also have overseen the building and extension of this kind of project in the past, and particularly in the 1990s. And we are currently in the process of expanding our waste-to-energy facility, which will be completed in January of 2010, next year. And at the tune of approximately $86 million, which, by the way, has been developed as an enterprise operation, which is very unique amongst many of the entities and government, local governments. Rochester Community and Technical College has a desire to switch from the electric and gas to clean and green and cheaper heating and cooling sources for several of their current buildings, as well as all new ones. They will save approximately 27% on heating and cooling costs, but the full payback, if you will, and the construction cost would take 17 years for us to recoup if we bore the entire cost of this project. I would also refer to you to a letter that is in your packet. I think everyone has a copy of that from the Community and Technical College. And just taking consideration, this is also building on a partnership that we've had in the past over the past 20 years working with the college on endeavors with energy, and they've been certainly a wonderful partner to work with. As mentioned, we would pay half of the cost, approximately $6 million, and we would ask the state to pay the other half since this is for the Community and Technical College. We can get started on the project this summer. Our estimate is that the installation will provide 8 months of work and employ approximately 70 people, plus the materials and engineering, which will be procured locally. I would turn to John Helmers at this time from Olmsted County to also present some more information.
Welcome, John.
Thank you, Chairman and members. Happy to be here. I'm here to help answer
And your name.
I'm sorry, John Helmers, Solid Waste Manager for Olmsted County. And I'm happy to be here to answer any questions that you might have. I direct you to a few of the pages in the handouts. The second page illustrates our existing system and how we fit into the whole global greenhouse gas emission system. And the next page after that is a handout that kind of shows a proposed route over to the campus and shows the extent. It's not just one pipeline going to the facility. It's a combination of a pipeline that sends the steam out and another pipeline that brings the condensed water back. It's a closed loop system, and we reuse that water repeatedly. And then there's also vaults and manholes and things along the way for maintenance purposes and whatnot. And I think Commissioner Wilson actually touched on all the major points that we wanted to touch on, so I'd be open for questions.
Any questions at all, Representative Mahoney?
This is a question for Representative Norton. Is this a high-pressure steam or a low-pressure steam system?
Thanks a lot, Representative Mahoney. I'm going to defer that.
Not allowed that here.
I'm Representative Mahoney, I think this is similar, although Representative Norton, I have to tell you that, you know, Virginia has the largest central steam heating system in the world.
And a lot of hot air, too.
Right, and a lot of hot air. So I moved to table House File 23. So thank you for coming up here. No, but I'm glad to see this is a green energy program, because I didn't know that our system, and I've been saying that for years around here, but nobody's agreed with me on that, Representative Norton, so now I've got one ally. But my question to you is, have you thought about getting this money out of the stimulus package for the green energy portion instead of bonding.
Thank you, Chair Rukavina, for the question. Yes, I think there are numerous revenue sources for this, and the stimulus package is one. In fact, our county folks met with Representative Kalin, who's been carrying the green bill, the green jobs bill, and perhaps they can share a little bit of their conversation with him and the appropriateness. I think there might be some issues with the amount of money that the stimulus package will allow us to spend. It's much smaller amounts, but perhaps a portion of it could come from that.
Comments from either one of you?
Yes, John Hilmers. That is true. The amounts that they were talking about were in the order of $500,000 to $1 million. And as you can see, we're looking for $6 million. We see this as a project that kind of benefits the state in a number of ways. It benefits the state from the standpoint of making an investment in the jobs and doing the stimulus, but also long-term with MinSU of saving energy costs over time and reducing their operational costs. So that's one of the reasons why we're here.
Okay. Any further questions? Not then. Representative Norton renews her motion. House Bill 23 be recommended to pass and we refer to capital bonding finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Anderson, do you want to come up here and share so I can do my bill, please? Oh, excellent. Don't scavel me down, please, or anything.
Well, Mr. Chair, you're a brave man.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It reminds me of the whole story about when Pete Spadina, who represented District 5A ahead of me, was chair of the Higher Education Committee, and he gave the gavel to the vice chair, who was from Hibbing, Minnesota, and he wouldn't give him the gavel back. So hopefully you won't do that.
I got that idea.
Madam Chair, I'll move House Bill 1063 be recommended to pass and we refer to capital bonding finance. And Madam Chair, just briefly, 1063 is a bill that has all of the projects that got vetoed last year, so there are folks here from both, I believe, MinSU and the university to talk about their portions of it, and the university only has one, so I don't know if there's anyone to speak on it on behalf of the Bell Museum or not, but I guess there is. So,
Mr. Kidd, is this your amendment? Did you want to move this first? Or
I don't have any amendments. I believe Representative Hodge has a number of amendments, and he can probably, but why don't we hear the bill first, because I think there might be some discussion on those plans, sir. Thank you.
If you could state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, I'm Kathleen O'Brien, Vice President for University Services at the University of Minnesota. I'm pleased to be at the committee today to discuss the presentation of the Bell Museum of Natural History. Committee members will remember that this was in the bonding bill that was passed by the legislature last year. Unfortunately, it was vetoed, and so we are bringing it back before you this year. This is a high priority of the university and is really integral to the university's academic mission. The Bell is more than a traditional museum. It's home to the innovative programming and critical resources that provide support materials for more than 50 university courses. It increases the public's understanding of natural history and the university's research and outreach mission. Last year, there were more than 130,000 visitors to the Bell, including 20,000 teachers and students. The Bell tackles issues of critical importance to Minnesota and its citizens. climate change and the environment, natural resource management, energy, and sustainability. It collaborates with local organizations on hundreds of programs and has national relationships with the Field Museum in Chicago, Cornell's Ornithology Lab, and the World Wildlife Fund. The new Bell Museum will be 71,000 square feet of space, located on a 13-acre parcel on the southwest corner of Washington and Cleveland Avenue in St. Paul. There are two phases of construction, and we're seeking funding for the first phase, which includes the museum building on the north side of the site with parking and landscaping, and south side of the site grading and the pond. The second phase would include landscaping for the south side of the site and outdoor exhibits, and that would be about a $4 million addition in the future. This south portion would be devoted to exhibits representing Minnesota's four biomes, the coniferous forest, hardwood forest, oak, savanna, and prairie. The project cost has been updated to account for a year of construction and site completion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, are there any questions at this point, or do you want to proceed with the rest of the bill? Or?
Yes, please, if I could. Thank you. If Ms. Dodge will come down.
Madam Chair, for the tape, Alan Johnson from the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I'll have a little bit more detail when I have my presentation time coming up here, but just to speak to the bill, that there are nine projects on there. Five projects were vetoed last year, and they are back now in front of you. And there are four additional projects which were partially funded last year and that are ready for bidding and construction. Of these nine projects, they can all be bid and under construction this calendar year. And I think that will go to what I'll explain later is the ability to put people to work during this particular time.
Mr. Johnson, could you point out which ones were vetoed and which ones were partially funded in 2008?
Madam Chair, if we just go down the list by subdivision then, Subdivision 2, Hennepin Technical College, well, I'll just point out the vetoed ones first, Madam Chair. Subdivision 3, Lake Superior. Subdivision 4, Metro State. Subdivision 6, North Hennepin Community College. 7, the Northeast Higher Education District in Eveleth. And Subdivision 10, system-wide class renovation. Those five were the actual veto projects. The other four were partially funded in 2008.
And Mr. Johnson, can you tell us, of the ones that were vetoed and the ones that are on this bill, are they still in your top of your list, or where did they land on the list for the MinSCU priority?
Madam Chair, they were the ones that were vetoed were throughout the list last year. I would expect that you will see them as we're proposing our list for next session, that they will be at the top of the list, followed by the other projects in their relative order that they were on the list in 2008. So you will, if nothing came to pass in this legislative session, you would see these projects at the top towards the top of the list. It's not the top of the list in 2010.
Okay, Madam Chair, and it would be my intention to make sure that they are at the top because they were vetoed and they were kind of jumped over, and so they should be placed at the top of the list if it had been done as it has in previous years. Madam Chair, perhaps at this time we could look at the packet of amendments that are in your list, and Representative Haas, you might just want to do this one.
Okay, I'm happy to do that. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rick Avina, and we'll keep Alan Johnson as our testifier here. In your packet, we have six amendments. They are pertinent to St. Cloud State University, Riverland Campus, Metropolitan State, South Central Tech, and increase in bonding, which would be most exciting for Mankato and Normandale, but also for all the other colleges and universities. In there are H106, 3A1 through A6s. The A5 amendment pertains to the college in my district. That is because Brown Science Hall renovation would appear to be going to be going under budget, so an underfunded design of the Applied Science Building could now be funded with that in mind, and a demolition. And maybe I would ask our testifier, Alan Johnson, to walk us through those six amendments, please.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fogg. I'll just go down as they're listed here, the Brown Science Hall renovation amendment. The project was funded in 2008 for $14.8 million. Bids have been taken for that project and came in significantly below, close to $4 million under estimate. Kind of shows you that this is a very strange bidding climate right now. On the other hand, the science and engineering lab, that was appropriated at $900,000 last year and was less than the request. The request had been $1.9 million to finish the design. So the opportunity here is to use some authorization and some savings from one project for one that is tracking for 2010 and to complete the design so it can be bid and awarded as soon as it's funded in 2010. And thus the language here for enabling it to be used, the funding to be used.
Mr. Johnson, can you tell us why it wasn't given more than $900,000 in last year?
Madam Chair, the request was $1.9 million for design, and in putting together the final bill, there were a number of projects that, particularly those that were for design, that funding was reduced in order to make the final number that the legislature was interested in.
Well,
the project was approved to move forward. It wasn't sufficiently funded for design in order to complete the design at the time.
Madam Chair,
Mr.
I had two design projects, one for St. Cloud Tech's Applied Science Building and one for the Health Partners Building at the Votech College. Both were in the budget, but both were greatly reduced for the planning money, and this is an opportunity to bring that up too, and get the project shovel ready.
Okay. Representative Haas, I believe, too, are you planning to move this amendment then?
I would so move it.
Okay. Members, any questions?
Madam Chair, I don't have any problem. Are you moving the A5 amendments?
A5.
Madam Chair, I don't have any problem with the A5 amendment being added to the bill.
Okay. Let's wait. Can we just wait then, and we'll just do them all? Get a chance to.
Madam Chair, that will be your discretion. Mr. Riccobina, Representative Riccobina's bill. So.
Can we take them individually?
Sure. Yeah. Representative Haas moves the A5 amendment to House File 1063. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes and is attached to House File 1063. And we have the A4 amendment, Representative Haas.
I'll have our witness. I'll walk it through this place.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could, on the A4 amendment, I think my understanding from the folks at Minster was that that this was always intended, but the language didn't get in the bill. I don't have a problem because it's the same appropriation, so I'll move the A4 amendment.
Okay. Representative Ruth Avina moves Amendment A4. Mr. Johnson, can you walk us through this one, please?
Madam Chairman, as the Representative Rukavina said, it was always the intention that there would be some minor capital improvements made to this property. It did not get into the language, although if you look at the project documents to back up the project, there was discussion about minor improvements. These are for things like emergency lighting, intercom system, slight expansion of the existing bookstore to gain some more floor space to sell the product, reconfiguration of two offices into three offices, and construction of a small shed to accommodate the lawn equipment, that, since we picked up 18 acres of land with this particular acquisition. So the money is available in the appropriation and can be used for these minor improvements.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Johnson, is Owatonna College and University Center a Minsky institution?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, it was authorized by the legislature last session for acquisition. It had been a lease facility for about 8 years, 8 to 9 years, and the college, Riverland College, had been delivering programs at Owatonna for many years in an old Sizzler steakhouse. So, continuation of that.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you. I'm glad this is a case because in Fairmont, Minnesota, we have an education campus that is served by Minnesota West as well as Mankato State and Fresno State College. And I think this is a terrific idea, Mr. Chairman. I'll look forward to your help later.
Members, any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Rukavina renews his motion to pass the 84 amendment, House File 1063. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment A4 passes. We are now on the A3 amendment.
Madam Chair, on the A3 amendment, I believe the request here was that there was some non-state money coming in for this project. I think the university had also asked me to strike the $2 million, but I just reworded it because I get nervous when they ask me to do it. So I'm sure Mr. Johnson doesn't have any problem with the way this amendment is structured.
Mr. Johnson?
You might want to talk about it.
Madam Chairman, we added the non-state money as an addition to the college and the university are both hopeful that there might be some non-state money, some private money that could be raised into the project. We were hopeful that we could strike the $2 million so that there could be some flexibility in this project as well, because it is with two collaborating institutions on a third institution's campus. It's a challenge to complete the collaboration, if you will. So that's the reason that it was done that way. I'll have to talk to the president. I'm certainly grateful to move it this way, and we'll just have some further conversation with the three institutions as it goes forward.
Okay. Anything further to add, Representative Savina? Mm-hmm. Are you making this motion?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Members, any questions? Seeing no questions, all those in favor of the A3 amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? A3 amendment passes.
Well, Madam Chair, if we could discuss both the A6 maybe here, Mr. Johnson. I think Representative Paz was approached by the Minsky system to offer these amendments up, and when I looked at them, I had some issues with some of them, so I drafted them individually. If we look at the A6 amendment, which jumped from $200 million to $300 million, the ability of the Board of Trustees to issue these revenue bonds before they couldn't. Last year, I think we let them go from $150 million to $200 million. And now they want to go from $200 million to $300 million. And these are projects that don't come to us, they don't come to the Capitol. I have a problem personally with it. I agreed last year to a $50 million increase, and now basically with this request by Minscu, it would double the amount of revenue bonds that Minscu could issue without coming to the legislature. I don't have a problem with adding the 2 years, which is what the colleges, I believe, does on line 1.13. It allows two-year institutions to have revenue bonds issued for them. My problem with it in general, members, and if you look in your packet, right now, if you look in your packet, there's a list in here of the total debt on the Minscu system, which is at approaching $300 million. And then you've got this here. You know, we're getting talking real money. And the problem I have with the amendment and jumping up to 300 after we gave them $50 million more last year to in aggregate to be able to issue is that these bonds are basically paid for all by the kids, if I'm not mistaken, because the revenue bonds, whether it's a parking lot or a cafeteria or whatever. And I really have a concern about that. So, members, I hope, you know, we could just incorporate the language on 1.13 and just strike everything or strike the go back to the old language up on line 1.6, but maybe Mr. Johnson can convince me otherwise.
Mr. Johnson.
Or you guys. But I hope you stick with me.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, the revenue fund, as Representative Rukavina indicated, is a separate fund within the college and university system that allows us to sell revenue bonds for student residence halls, student unions, wellness centers, parking facilities, any facility that generates revenue. And so the revenue fund itself has a total debt outstanding of $155 million. Now the list that that you have in your packet is the debt from the general obligation bonds, and that's you know, that's a significant amount. $155 million in the revenue fund represents work that's been done in recent years to build residence hall and modernize student unions. We have four new projects that are getting ready for a bond sale this coming spring. Parking lot improvements at Century College, student centers at Normandale Community College and Minneapolis Community and Technical College, and student athletic recreational facilities at MSU Mankato. Those will come to about $40 million. So if you added the current debt at $155 and the $40 million, of new projects, all of which have been supported by the students at those individual institutions, we would come up to just bumping up to our debt capacity, our debt authority. That's a little risky, and I'm afraid one of those projects could fall out if bond rates were increased or if cost estimates increased. So. That's the reason to go above the $200 million. In addition, I'd like you to consider that the revenue fund capacity for debt is $300 to $350 million. That's a study that we've had done, and so the fund itself is healthy enough to assume that kind of debt. All projects that go through the fund are student supported or user supported from the individual campus. I would not take a project to the board if we didn't have student support, and the board wouldn't approve a project without the student support. So that's a very important aspect of this program. It's funded by user fees. That could be room and board. It could be parking fees. It could be student activity fees. And it does add a fee burden, certainly, but they're generally small when compared to the overall fees. So that pretty much sums it up from our perspective.
Mr. Johnson, on one of the student fee statements that I saw, it had a line on there that said capital improvement fee. Is that what this is then?
Madam Chairman, I'm not quite sure. It could be, depending on...
It's part of the student service fees, but they had a line just for capital improvement.
It's likely that it would depend on the institution. I'd have to do some research for you.
And Mr. Johnson, can you tell us how much have these fees been in the past, and are we seeing a steady increase? You know, is it status quo? What are we looking at as far as what has been the history of this? And then also, have you taken into consideration enrollment issues? You said it was sustainable, but does that take into consideration enrollment as well?
Madam Chairman, it certainly does take into consideration the enrollment, because when you look at these revenue bonds, you do have to look out for 20 years and be assured that the enrollment is sustainable and that it will be able to repay the bond. To your question about fees, three of the projects are for the two-year school, and this is brand new. We've never had that before. It was placed into statute last year at the student's request, and it's being tidied up a bit here this year. But three of the projects at the two-year schools are brand new. At MCTC in Normandale, these are student support type activities, student lounges, fitness centers, meeting rooms, student life and student clubs, things of that nature. So these are new fees. In the case of Minneapolis Community and Technical College, it's a $200 per year fee. In the case of Normandale, $150 per year. In the case of Century College, which is a parking lot renovation, the current fee to park at Century College is $90 a year, the current fee. That would rise by $1 a year per credit hour, so full-time student, that's about $30 a year. That would rise every 2 years by 50 cents, $1.50 outward. So it still is a pretty good deal for getting a much improved parking lot that is both a safety hazard and a congestion hazard for the growing enrollment. At Mankato State, the athletic recreation field is a new fee. That's about $60 per academic year that would be added to the fee range. And once again, the local students have all been briefed on these at the local level and have all endorsed the project.
When you say the local students, you mean like the student service fee committee of students, so it's not the entire student body or just the members that were appointed to the student service fee committee, or what are we talking about here?
Madam Chairman, I'm talking about student senate, student leadership at the campuses. This is the type of consultation that we ask for any fees as well as tuition.
Okay. We have Representative Detmer and Representative Murphy. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Testifier, what would happen if we stayed at the original $200 million aggregate principal amount? How would that change the project?
Madam Chair, as I indicated, the estimate right now would bring the total debt in the revenue fund to just shy of $200 million. So theoretically, it would be okay. My concern is that with interest rates and with cost estimates of projects, that one of the projects might not be able to go. If for whatever reason that at the time of the sale this coming June, the debt would go above $200 million, we would be capped at $200 million, and one of these projects that directly supports the students at these institutions would not be able to go. I can't answer which project. We haven't looked at it from that perspective, but that would be the immediate impact.
Representative,
just a quick follow-up. So why wasn't the next amount, say, $250 million versus $300? How did you come to that amount?
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, we looked at the revenue at the debt capacity of the revenue fund. The debt capacity is how much debt can the fund assume and that amount has been shown to be $300 to $350 million of capacity, and so we chose to go to 300, which is currently below the capacity.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Yes. Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, I just want clarification that who carries the debt service? Does this committee carry the debt service then, or does the capital investment, or does the MINSCU?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the debt is carried by MINSCU, and it is backed up by the revenue generated by the facilities that are in the revenue fund. There is no state money. There's no state pledge. It's not backed up by tax dollars. It is only backed up by the revenue capacity that the fund has. This is typical with these types of facilities throughout higher education.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson, and it doesn't count against us when we're making our capital investment allocations next year. For the appropriations and bonding debt.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, that's my understanding. Does not count against the state debt capacity.
But members, again, last year, MINSCU came to us, and Representative Demers, kind of to your point, they asked it to be bumped from 150 to 250. And I'm the kind of person that likes, you know, kind of a, you know, progressive libertarian in a way, so I kind of like to follow the Constitution, except when I want to veer from it for my own purposes. But other than that, you know, so you know, I don't like us giving authority up. And what this means, you know, the more you go up is that they can just keep issuing debt. And you know, I know they're revenue bonds, but I've seen in the past we've got, you know, let's just say, Mr. Johnson, for the sake of, you know, discussion here, that for some reason one of these projects went sour, MINSCU's not going to abandon it. They're going to have to, I think, pay debt service on some of these if something went bad, regardless, because the state's not going to let their, you know, debt go bad. I know we're experiencing that at one of our revenue bonds up at IRRRB. So, again, I want you to look at this list, almost $289 million of debt that the state's carrying through capital bonding, and now wanting to go up to $300 million on revenue bonds. I just think it's a little big of a jump. And Mr. Johnson, maybe we got to slow down a little bit and realize a smaller parking lot or a smaller, you know, student service project might be in the making. And if I'm not mistaken, tell me how this works, but as you retire some of these projects off, then you've got the capacity to bond up to the 200 again, right?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Rucavina, that's correct. As projects are paid off, still can be within the debt capacity. We're not paying them off that quickly. And I, you know, looking at the debt that we had as of yesterday, the almost $156 million, with $40 million of projects that are coming, it's awfully close to that limit that we would like to pursue. We think all these projects are good. Again, they're supported by the schools and by their constituents. And so we would like to be able to continue our planning here for the a bond sale this June.
Mr. Johnson, can you tell us, what is the average life of these funds? How long does it usually take to pay them off? How many classes are we talking that are paying these off?
Madam Chair, these are generally 20-year bonds. Okay. There are occasions where we sell for 10 years or even an early call at 5 years, depending on the particular project, but generally speaking, at 20 years.
And Mr. Johnson, what is the life expectancy for a parking lot or a student union hall or a residence hall?
Madam Chair, well, a residence hall, easily 50 years. We've got the residence halls at our universities that are well over that. A parking lot itself, this is a complete re-engineering of a parking lot. If any of you have been to Century College, you know how poorly that is laid out and what a safety hazard it is. So the reconstruction of the parking lot is certainly a 20-year lifespan. Certainly you will need maintenance and repair during that period. This is not just simply an asphalt overlay of an existing parking lot.
Mr. Representative Welty has been very patient. He has questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, I have a couple of questions. First question is, you know, you referenced student fees at certain institutions are increasing in order to pay for some of the costs of the project. But then also, since it's revenue bonds, there's also the dollars that the students are paying for some sort of service, whether it be housing or whether it be parking. And with a new project, those services would also be increasing. So is it fair to say in some of the projects is that students are paying an additional student fee, plus they're also paying the additional cost of whatever new service that they're getting?
Madam Chair, Representative Welty, the revenue fund covers all costs of the activity. So when a fee is proposed for a particular project, that fee covers not only the construction, but we always look at as well as the incremental operating costs, the incremental repair, depreciation, and any other costs that's related to that incremental improvement.
Representative Mr. Okay. Chair,
so
if I could, I think Representative Welty, the fees pays for the debt service, the charges for living expenses, and that pays for the staffing and the ongoing maintenance.
Right. So the
and, you know,
Representative Welty.
Yeah. So to the testifier, and whenever we build something new, there's probably going to be an increased cost for housing, or there's going to be an increased cost for that parking. And then your student fee is also paying for the debt service. I'm getting that correct. And the reason I bring this up is if we go down this road of expanding your bonding capacity, our student, you know, you said that Minsky has a limit. Well, our students also have a limit. And we're hearing from many of them that the cost of tuition, cost of going to college, the fees and everything else is becoming exceedingly difficult to meet. And if we continue down this road, I just fear that we're going to be pricing higher education out of the reach of many of our students. And when you talked about needing this additional capacity because a project or two might go over, I don't necessarily buy that, because you're looking for $100 million in an increase. And if you're looking at one project, I don't think it's going to run you the additional cost of $100 million. So if you're coming to us asking, just expand our capacity to bond and give us another $100 million of bonding authority, I can see that. I can see that's your request. But to say it's just because of one project, I don't see that as being the case. And I don't mean to put you on the spot. I know you're bringing forward this because you have a number of projects that you want to move forward on, but my concern is this, members, if we had adopted this amendment today and hearing that it was just at $150 million and we increased it to $200 million just recently, we just continued to increase this over and over and over again. The costs are piling on our students. And there has to be some point in time where we slow this down. I know when I was at college, we increased the technology fee, and I was on the student senate at the time, and we increased it because we needed this technology. But they, I know, recently have held the line on that technology fee. And I just don't think it's wise to be increasing it another $100 million, because I can just see the costs adding up on whatever new project it is, that new service they're going to be paying for, and the additional fee for the debt service.
Madam Chair, if I could suggest,
Representative Rufino,
you know, and this was a good discussion, and I think Mr. Johnson and others maybe can make their case, but I don't think the A6 or the A1 amendment have to be done today. These other ones would be to get into the, you know, to the bonding bill and approve things that were made last year and changes that were made last year to allow those to move forward. These other two aren't like that, so we still have an omnibus bill to put together. And you know, perhaps we could just set these aside for now and then get to make the case that we're putting our bond bill together. Representative Haas, we did pass your...
Madam Chair.
Representative Haas.
Representative Rebina. Last year, I carried a bill to put the college's approval with the state university, and that was a request of the students. Obviously, that didn't go through because it's back, you know, here. Do we need to move that portion forward, or can that come at as a delay also?
Madam Chair, that could be delayed because, and I don't have a problem with putting the 2 years, as I said, but it doesn't need to be on this bill that's going for capital funding.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I would say last year it was a request of the students to include colleges, and they were talking about including it. I don't recall if they're talking about including it at $250 million when the bill was at $250 or at the adapted $200. But the college students wanted to be part of this program. So that they could also have capital improvements through the same process at the university. And I thought that should be noted. And if that can be done at a later time, I'm happy with that. But it should be kept around at least.
Representative Hoffman, staff tells me that it was done. This is just a technical change, if I'm...
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam.
Representative Rubino.
Then I renew my motion that House File 1063 as amended. We refer, recommend the pass and we refer to capital bonding finance.
Mm-hmm. We refer to capital finance, or capital investment. Representative Rubino, I do have two other members that wish to speak. I didn't know if this, after your action, if that changed their mind. Representative Detmer had a question. Representative Downey, have we resolved your concerns, or do you have questions?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question on the student fees. Because the MEMC is under one umbrella when you have a capital bonding project in one campus. Does that student fee, is that over all the campuses or just that campus increase?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer. Student fees are campus-based.
Okay.
Representative Detmer.
That's fine.
Okay. Representative Downing.
If we're going to take it up again, I'm going to take that.
Okay. All right. Mr. Johnson, I know it would be helpful for me if you could give us a list of what the fees are for each of these campuses that currently have the situation and how much the fee that the students are paying for these revenue bonds. Is that something MEMC could provide?
Madam Chair.
With the projects, with details on what the project was and how much their fee is for that specific project, if there's more than one project on a campus.
Madam Chair, just so I'm clear, that's the existing fees for the revenue fund program.
The existing, and I think it was helpful to have the proposed ones as well.
And these proposed projects.
Yes. Yeah.
Madam Chair, maybe that can be answered now, but I would also like to know how is the students made part of that decision-making process? Is that by a Senate vote or student body vote, or does this vary per project?
And Representative Murphy, did you have one? No, Representative Downing?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe as compared to asking a question, I'd ask for a similar information request. A little bit of information about how this kind of assessment of your level staying within your limits was set, and maybe what that's been historically, and if the inclusion of the colleges now kind of bumps up the... kind of the factors that drive towards the limit that you feel is possible. I don't have a good sense of why that limit was 150 and then 200 and now why you think it's viable at $300 million. So some information to support why that increase is warranted.
Members, any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Ruka Vina renews his motion to send House File 1063 to the Capital Finance Committee as amended. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? The the motion passes, and House File 1063 goes to Capital Finance. Okay. And we now have House File 859, Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 859 that be recommended to pass and re-refer to capital bond and finance. This is the Heifer bill, and Mr. Johnson, I will just stay here. I believe all of you have a list of both the Minsky. I don't know if you have a university list, but they're probably going to come up and hand one out to you. This is the Minsky list here, I think. These are all the project members. I fully support the whole concept of EFER and keeping our all of our different buildings and that viable and maintained. So, Mr. Johnson, if you just want to briefly touch on the dollar amount, maybe.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, the request is for $50 million in HEPA projects. The list that you have at your place addresses a project or projects at every one of our colleges and universities. We have historically requested in the last three or four biennium $110 million for HEPA. And that's been part of our long-range plan to reduce our backlog. Last year, in 2008, $55 million was funded. Of that 55, I'm happy to say that $28 million is under contract. That's over 50% of that 55 from last year is now under contract and people are working. We have historically also recognized individual college and university priorities when setting these HEPA lists, basically looking at keeping students, staff, and faculty and our buildings warm, safe, and dry. This HEPA request is a little bit different this year, members. It's a little different in that we have focused it on fast execution. We have intentionally put this together with help from our colleges and universities that we can have, of the $50 million, should that be appropriated, that $40 million of that will be underway by the end of this calendar year, or 80% of that by this calendar year. If I could then just mention one other thing before the, or in addition to HEPA, that $40 million by the end of this calendar year, those other projects that were referenced earlier, that most of those can be ready in 30 to 120 days where they can be bid and the contract awarded. And so that was $117 million total with the projects and with HEPA. All that work can be out this year and working into next year as well.
Members, any questions? And Mr. Johnson, did you say the remaining $15 million, when that would be ready to go? I missed that part.
Madam Chairman, of the $50 million,
I'm looking at asset preservation HEPA for 2008, $55 million funded, $28 million now under contract, and then you expect that $40 million will be done by the end of December 2009. So,
Madam Chair, the $40 million of the new appropriation of the 50.
I see.
The 2008 HEPA will be all spent in calendar 2009, and now with the 50, an additional $40 million of that would be encumbered by the end of the year. $10 million in the first half of 2010.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Hodge?
Thank you much, Madam Chair. Is there any way to diagnose this to see if some of these projects for asset preservation could be a move to the federal stimulus bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Hodge, the way the bill is currently coming down to us, it's just not clear, Representative, as to what could go to the federal stimulus side and what we would rely on the state for. We're keeping a close eye on that, and we'll use that to the fullest extent if we're able to.
Madam Chair, to that point, a week from today, when OAC comes in, I think after our second meeting for the region,
we'll have a briefing and maybe they can help us understand what might qualify under that package.
Thank you much.
And Madam Chair,
Representative,
I believe in the university, if we could move ahead.
Sure.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, thank you very much. The University of Minnesota...
Is it Ms. O'Brien?
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Kathleen O'Brien, Vice President for University Services, the University of Minnesota. The university's CEPA request is for $35 million, and like the university's capital request regularly, we're governed by planning principles that are passed by the Board of Regents. And those principles really are based on three fundamental factors. First and foremost, that the academic priorities of the institution guide our capital priorities. Secondly, that we really take care of what we've got. We are good stewards of our assets. And third, that we're really doing this within a sound financial planning principle. The University of Minnesota is a 157-year-old institution with some of the oldest buildings in the state. There's more than 800 buildings, more than 28 million gross square feet of space. More than 250 of these buildings are on the Twin Cities campus, and when you look across the state, 70% of the buildings are over 30 years old. And we know when our house is 30 years old, and maybe when we're 30 years old, we start needing to have things to pay attention to, like new roofs, new heating, etc. We have some of the most complex buildings in the state, whether they're sophisticated research buildings with multiple air and water handling systems, barns, auditoriums, arenas, clinics, classrooms, libraries. The university for the last 8 years has conducted a facilities condition assessment, and this is an inspection-based assessment that is continuously underway. We're in our third cycle of doing this assessment. We inspect 7 to 8 million square feet annually, and this facilities condition assessment is really what helps us prioritize our higher ed asset preservation needs. It's estimated to replace all the buildings across the campus, that across the university, that it would be close to $7 billion. State keeper funds, then, your higher ed asset preservation and replacement funds, are the dollars that the university requests to take care of our existing facilities. And by statute, they're required to be spent in three areas: health and safety, building systems, and utility infrastructure. This year, we're really focusing on the Twin Cities campus in the area of energy and utility. And our energy and energy management and utility programs, again, are based on three principles. One is reliability: do the systems work for the campus? Two, sustainability goals: are we being good environmental stewards? And three, are we controlling costs? So in our keeper request of $35 million, about $30 million of that request is for three projects on the Twin Cities campus. Each of these projects are ready to go. Each of these projects would not only repair critical portions or components of the university's utility systems, but also they would save us operating dollars and provide an estimated $1 to $2 million a year. For the HEPA requests across the state, each year when we recalibrate and prioritize our HEPA list, we really do that proportionately across the system. We have that facilities condition assessment across the university and the research and outreach centers, as well as our coordinate campuses. And we're continually updating that priority list. This priority list really shows where we are right now, but an ice storm or a burst water pipe could change the priority tomorrow in terms of the use of these dollars. And the sheet that we've handed out to you really gives you a summary of what this list is now. And Madam Chair, committee members, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Members, any questions? Okay. Representative Rukavina, did you want to put the amounts in, the $50 million and the $35 million in the bill?
I think we'll...
Are you just going to leave them blank?
Well,
Madam Chair, that's up to the committee's discretion. I think it can lead to your, let's put the numbers in. We might as well be realistic when we go to Representative Alden's committee.
Okay.
So I'll move to amend the 50 and 35 into the bill.
Does everybody understand what we just did? Okay. All those in favor of Representative Rukavina's amendment to insert the dollar amounts of $50 million and $35 million for Minsky and U of M? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the bill is amended. Representative Downey, you had a question?
Yeah, really briefly, this is for Representative Rukavina. Pardon my lack of knowledge in this, but if we go ahead and authorize this, and then in the end we can allocate some of the federal stimulus money, I assume this bill is bonding amounts just carry forward and can be leveraged in a future period for other projects. Is that correct? We wouldn't be obligated to spend these funds for those projects, even though there was federal stimulus money available for them.
I think when we, Madam Chair, Representative, when we hear next week from OHC, we'll have a better understanding, and if we can utilize the immediately some federal dollars instead of state, we'll try to do that. That's my intent. And Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, did you have a suggestion? No.
The blank on 119.
Yeah, we'll fill that. Add them up and put it in.
85.
There we go. In all three places. And then I'll renew my motion.
All right. Well, one more time, one more amendment for the $85 million on line 19. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Okay, we're very official now. House File 859, Representative Rukavina, renewed his motion to send this bill to Capital Investment Finance. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So, as amended, excuse me, we'll start over. All those in favor of passing House File 859 as amended to the Capital Investment Finance Committee. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, it is passed, and we'll go on to Capital Investment Finance. Ms. O'Brien.
Madam Chair, I just would ask the indulgence of the committee to introduce the Board of Regents members who are here with us today.
Representative Rukavina, you all good with that?
Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I see three of them.
Yes. Madam Chair, Chair Patty Simmons, who's a regent from the 1st Congressional District, Steve Hunter, who is an at-large representative, and David Metzen, who is a representative from the 4th Congressional District. Thanks for your consideration and assistance today. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Anto. Representative Action moves that Representative House File 191 be recommended passed and re-referred to Capital Bonding Finance. Representative Anto, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a capital bonding request for Rainy River Community College, which is located in International Falls, the capital city of Couchiching County, on the Canadian border, and it's for the preservation of part of a campus building for recreation and physical education, and the amount is $101,000.
Oh, you are just a thrifty, parsimonious type fellow, aren't you?
Just trying to be of service to you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions, Representative Anzell? Not? All those in favor Representative Atkins renews his motion. House File 191 be recommended to pass and be referred to Capital Bonding. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Amendment is adopted. Representative Fugenius, Representative Poppy moves that House File 562 be recommended to pass and be referred to Capital Bonding Finance, I believe. Representative Fugenius, welcome. Sorry, Representative Fugenius. I always save the best for last.
That is so. thank you, members of this is I don't want to call it a technical change because it really is not. But as we were sitting in the Capital Bonding Committee talking about deeper requests, people were talking about building efficiency improvements as one of the things that could be done with deeper money. And as we looked at the language, people thought that was implicit in the language, but it was not explicit. This is language making that explicit. No more, no less. And I appreciate your support.
Any questions? Looks good to me, Representative Poppins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since I'm moving this, I had a question. Representative Wiggins, could you just describe how you'd come to determine current best practices?
That, I think, would not be for me, but for the architectural community that makes these proposals. I think they would be the ones that would know.
Okay. Any other questions, then? If not, Representative Donovan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I heard warm, safe, and dry a few times from Minsky, and I don't know that I heard those exact terms from the University of Minnesota, but this would seem to actually, in my mind, go beyond warm, safe, and dry, and I'm wondering if there's been a more complete discussion than the one we're having here. I don't, again, have the history on HEPR and don't have the history of why it came to be, but in terms of just kind of functional adequacy, it would seem to me warm, safe, and dry is the standard, and if we wanted to look at energy efficiency as a separate category with some kind of return on investment, that would be expected. I know Representative Kalin's bill that was going to leverage federal stimulus dollars for weatherization and other energy efficiency projects actually had a payback mechanism so that as the savings were realized from the energy efficiency in the organization, realizing those savings was actually paying back the amount of money. And so I'm wondering if maybe a more comprehensive discussion would make sense as compared to simply accepting this here. That would be my opinion, at least.
Well, Warren, if I could, Mr. Chair, warm, safe, dry, and efficient. I think warm is safe, and dry are what the institutions decide is the correct. They're the ones that measure that. We're allowing them to measure efficient, too. We're not prescribing what it is or in terms of you have to have a certain number of paybacks in a number of years. That's their choice. We're not making that choice for them. All we're doing is saying that this is one of the things you can do. And as we were chatting with people, they thought they could do it anyway. So truly, we decided to make, as we were chatting in the bonding committee, to make explicit something that people already thought was implicit.
And Representative Downing, follow up?
I'll just conclude with a comment that I would actually end up not supporting this, in part based on that answer. It does seem to me there's a kind of a separate component here where there's a return on investment or some other value as compared to simply keeping the building functional. And again, not knowing the original intention of HEPR, but if it is presumed in my mind to be warm, safe, and dry, then I would say this is more than simply making explicit something implicit. I think this would be expanding the definition of what we've historically understood HEPR to be used for. Thank you.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not to prolong that discussion, but I don't think warm, safe, and dry has any statutory status whatsoever. And I think that actually had reference to the staff that's in the building, and we actually have been evaluating bonding projects in relation to energy efficiency criteria as a legislature prior to this. So I think Representative Wagenius is simply trying to make explicit you can look at it as financial efficiency, you can look at it as a commitment to energy issues, you can look at it philosophically in a variety of ways, but as a practical application, it has been in existence prior to this legislation.
And members and Representative Downing, I think, too, when new technology and everything has, you know, come along, we've tried to incorporate that even in HEPR and building and that. So I think this makes sense, but I guess maybe I should have looked at this a little better, because I think this, we could have probably just included this. It is a policy type issue, even though it deals with capital bonding, but I know probably you want to get this for the money that we're spending this year and the package that may be coming from the Fed. So we'll move it on as it was suggested in her move by Representative Poppy. So Representative Poppy removes her motion that House Bill 562 be recommended to pass and we refer to Capital Bonding Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. It's adopted. Okay, a couple. No. Members, before we leave, number one, Representative Downey moves the minutes and a correction, the minutes of Monday, February 23rd. All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. And members, you all have the candidate list for the Board of Regents in your packet that we will be discussing. They will be presenting themselves and their ideas, etc., to us on Thursday. With that, in room 200, with that meeting adjourned.